Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and our favorite media. I'm Joe Perez, one of your several lore focus hosts, and I've got my stupendous co-host with me today, Matt Rossi. How are you doing today, Matt?
Weasels.
I don't know what that means.
Very weasels. Just very weasels.
Very weasels. Okay, duly noted. All right, well, today we're going to be talking about something that you may have heard about and may have seen.
Weasels.
We're not talking about weasels. I mean, if dragons decide they're going to be weasels, I mean, we can't really stop them. But yes, we're not going to be talking about weasels today. Instead, we are going to be talking about the Legacies Chapter 3, which is an interesting development in terms of story, not just for the Dragonflights, not just for the Drac Theory either, but also for the history of, you know, Neltharion and what we know about what he is, what he does, what he did, and kind of puts a whole lot of, I don't want to say spin, but it's an interesting context to some of the things that we've seen in the past. Like, so it opens up with Norzomu walking through essentially a sand time storm with Emberthal leading or being led to whatever moment that Norzomu is taking them to. In which there's a statement of there's a blind spot in Norzdomu's sort of time tinkering memory, whatever you want to call it. There are events that occurred that even Norzdomu doesn't know what happened. In particular, he doesn't actually know at what point Neltharion became Deathwing. He doesn't know.
And I gotta say something here.
Go for it.
Did you notice what exactly Neltharion does and why?
Okay, We're going to get into that. There's a reason why we're doing a whole episode about this, folks. So it's believed, or at least it's presented to Emberthal, that Norzdomu thinks that the blind spot that he has is going to be centered upon the Drac Theor and wants Emberthal's help to sort of break through to that moment and relive a moment in history that apparently only the Drac Theor were there for. And so what we get is we get a flashback, right? We get Emberthal's memory where there is a fierce battle, and there's specifically a fierce battle that breaks out against these primordial dragon elemental forces that we've been talking about for weeks now. Instead of going and taking the fight to them, which is what the Drac Theor were apparently created for, specifically, not to study humanity, like we were told at one point, not to study what life would be, but to be an army of dragons or dragon hybrids that would be able to take the fight to these vast elemental creatures, these primordial dragons. And what it was is, well, they get devastated. They are absolutely devastated in this moment. But in that moment, leading up to the attack, we see something very specific. We see a legion of Dracthyrn armors in perfect rigid form, staring up at Neltharion in his humanoid form. And upon his hand, he is wearing a gauntlet, a Titan artifact, something that Nors Domu focuses on right away. Emberthal says that we fought with a unity of purpose. His will was our own. And Nors Domu goes, huh? Yeah, probably because he was will jacking you. And I assume this is what you wanted to talk about a little bit, Matt.
No, it isn't, but it's cool. No, not at all. The thing I want to talk about, since you've now given me the whole, there's a book series called The War of the Ancients. And in it, Nors Domu was unable to see through a point, mm-hmm. a vortex created by the old gods.
Yep.
That breaches time. What do we see Neltharion do when his order gizmo, his glove of commanding people, gets destroyed? What do we see him do?
He reaches out immediately to the dark places and reaches out to a power, an elder power. We can assume that it's N'Zoth because it's all tentacly and stuff.
Yeah, and Nors Domu himself says the old gods, and he creates a vortex.
Yep,
and sucks Razagath through it. I think he basically just Alduin'd him. If you've played Elder Scrolls Skyrim, he just Alduin's the problem. He punts.
Yep.
Faced with Razagath, Deathwing punts. He sends him forward. The reason all this stuff is happening now is because Deathwing sent that guy to the future.
Well,
That's what I think is what happened.
Maybe not Deathwing sending him to the future. Maybe it was not exactly Deathwing's call on what happened there.
Yeah, but whoever ultimately decided where the vortex was going, it's still basically a punt. It's like, oops, bang, lost my order thing, boop, down the road. Let someone else worry about this. But more importantly, the fact that Nors Domu couldn't see to that moment, I think, is very much connected to that vortex, because it's exactly like the vortex that he tried to investigate himself in the past and got stuck. And I think that's why he went and got himself a little Drakthir buddy this time, because the last time he tried to look through one of those things, he got jammed up and couldn't get out.
Specifically too, though, like, none of the other Dragonflight aspects or Dragonflights were present when this happened. Right. So he needed a vessel. He needed something that was there, that was present in that moment. And it just so happened that Emberthal, ones that were eventually locked away, which we're going to get into in a second here, were present. They were there. It's their memory, suppressed as it is. So he doesn't have to peer through time. He doesn't have to peer through the time ways anymore.
He doesn't have to go through the portal that we just see opened at the end of this and screw himself up again.
What he does is he goes and says, okay, well, you have this memory latent inside of you. Let's unlock it. And I need you to show me what you can remember. And it's interesting because I don't think we've ever seen Nors Domu do this before, right?
Not directly. We have seen him kind of do it. I'm trying to remember when we go back through the various End of Cataclysm dungeons, the End Times dungeons. When we go back to the Royal Palace, where Azshara is, to get the Dragon Soul, he basically uses a variation of it to send us. But this is the first time I've ever seen him just kind of use somebody else's memories.
Yeah.
But let's, for a moment, it's also similar to what Kairos did with the sands of time that he was gathering. So that's interesting. But let's go back to the shiny, happy glove of controlling people that we swear to God isn't domination magic, even though it looks exactly like domination magic.
Oh, I have theories, but I'm sure you do too. Well,
let's hear yours first then.
No, go for it. Please continue.
What I think about this is interesting is that the word Titan and the name Titan gets bandied about a lot for when we find artifacts like this. And I think we're going to end up with a thing where we redefine what Titan means. And there's going to be multiple different kinds of Titans. Like, up till now, Titans have been Amon-Thul and his pantheon and their real order obsession. But we've been told in the past that that might not be the only kind of Titan we get. And we've seen attempts to make artificial different Titans.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Sargeras has basically turned himself into a Fel Titan. There was an attempt to make a Void Titan. And apparently the old gods thought a Void Titan would be like, you know, the bomb would totally win everything in their direction. I think it's possible that there could be like beings that are titanic in scope and power, but are not anything like the Titans we've seen. And I don't know if we're going to get to see Death Titans. And I don't think that the Eternal Ones are Titans, because the Eternal Ones exist in another reality that they're basically integral to controlling and creating. But this reality that we're in right now has beings like the, not Mimiron, Algolon.
Yeah.
Like the Constellars. And we've seen that there are Constellars in or involved in the Sepulchre of the First Ones, right?
We've seen them in Helia's pocket dimension. We've seen them as Harbor, and we've seen they can move between realities. We know that much.
And they can be pledged to different powers.
Mm-hmm.
And I find myself wondering, there comes a period of time where a Constellar, Sargeras killed a Constellar. There was a Constellar that tried to stop him. Would a Constellar try to stop a Titan that it was sworn to? Like, even though he was doing something it didn't understand, wouldn't it try to get clarification?
And I think part of that is also we don't have a full understanding of what the Constellar really are.
Exactly. Right? That's where I'm going with this. Think about this in terms of what that gizmo we saw Deathwing using was. Where did it come from? Was it? And here's the thing that I've been thinking about. It was it went on one of his hands.
Yep.
Like a gauntlet or a fist weapon.
Yep.
And it reminded me of another fist weapon, the Fist of Ra'den.
Yep.
Now, Ra'den shaped and created the elemental planes using that fist. What was, if this other thing is related to it, what was it for? Because we know fist weapons tend to come in pairs. Like when there's pride, there's also glory. There tends to be another fist weapon that goes along with the first one. And I keep finding myself thinking, is this part of the original control structure? Was the attack not to get Deathwing and not to get the Drakthyr, but to destroy that thing before it could be used on them, since they were working for the elementals who were working for the old gods? And then he calls on the old gods, and of course they answer, but it's like, does it feel to you like a Xanatos Gambit?
Almost. A little bit.
If Deathwing calls upon them, sure, we'll answer. We'll do what you want. Because now we've got you. And we don't need Razageth anymore. That guy was great when we didn't have an actual aspect working for us. But now we do. So, sure. Yeah, he can go off somewhere.
It's a devil's bargain, right? Like, it's essentially what it winds up boiling down to in that moment. But
but not just that.
Layers to it.
Yeah, exactly. I think when I'm looking at it, the thing that keeps coming to my head was that it reminded me very much of when Illidan was working for Kael'thas. Not Kael'thas. Oh, my God. Man, I'm having a bad day today with this. Kil'jaeden.
Yes.
And each was planning to betray the other, and each had plans for when that betrayal didn't work. And I'm sitting there going, Deathwing doesn't kill them. And it's even called out in the video that Notharion does not kill the Drakthyr, even after he can't control them anymore.
Yeah, so I want to talk about that a little bit, too, before some speculation. I want to finish going through the short a little bit. So in this moment, we then see what happens is essentially a betrayal. And it's the betrayal of Notharion to the Drakthyr, because the Drakthyr are no longer useful to him. Now, whether this is his idea or whether this is the idea of the old gods that are now whispering in his head, telling him to do so, he approaches the Drakthyr. And originally we had thought that maybe it was like the blue dragon flight that had locked them away. And we speculated about this because there were some things that were present in the Drakthyr starting area that didn't exactly make this clear. But it turns out that he basically walked in and used his magic, or magic that is much more arcane in nature from what it seems like, to lock them away. Maybe similar magic to what was used, I don't know, to imprison old gods that decayed over time, just as the Drakthyr's magical bindings are breaking down now. There's a lot of similarities there, but he locks them away and then goes about his maniacal deeds. But again, at this point, the rest of the Dragonflights are not there. And so when the Drakthyr are waking up and they understand that the Drakthyr were created by Deathwing, they're nervous because they don't know what happened. We've seen other creations of Deathwings in the past. We've seen armies that he has created of mutations. We've seen entire Dragonflights created through his cruel experimentation of him and his bloodline that have assaulted the Dragonflights. Don't forget, Ultraxian existed. Ultraxian went hell for broke against to the Dragon Temple, the Wormrest Temple, and attacked it. We fought it there. We had to fight it back. It was going for the aspects. And it's an interesting thing to see, like, why exactly everybody would be so worried about these little humanoid dragons. But what I find also equally interesting is how tender Norsedomu is in the moment of the revelation of the betrayal. Norsedomu could say a bunch of things. He could be, you should have seen this coming, or, you know, it's your own fault, or whatever other empty, mean thing he could possibly have said. Instead, he's essentially comforting. He's, I understand that this is hard. This is terrible, but there's a reason you were locked away. Why? Think. Why would he fear you? Why would you be a thing to be locked away? You said you were devoted to him. He must have understood that. So why? And there's this moment of realization that he essentially gives Emberthal hope again. He gives Emberthal purpose throughout this most painful memory and coming out the other side of, you have a destiny now where you can choose to be what you want to be. You are no longer shackled to Neltharion. You are no longer shackled to Deathwing. You are no longer shackled to whatever device he created. And instead, you can choose your path. You can choose your war. You can choose your fight. While I hope you will help us, I can't make you and I will not make you. And it's an interesting and hopeful moment giving back to Emberthal, where that had been taken away for thousands of years. And Emberthal even says at this point, like, there's almost like, we have an ancient enemy that's coming back. And Emberthal says, you spoke of an ancient enemy's return. It is Razageth and the Primalist. That is why we were awakened. So, and then Norzomo says that it seems that Neltharion maybe yet had a purpose for you, but I don't know if that's necessarily true. I don't know if this was a contingency plan in Neltharion, like the real part of him, the actual dragon aspect, the original good guy that was deep understood. Yep, maybe.
But here's the other thing. The other thing is, I'm thinking it might not have been the good Neltharion, but Neltharion was always a pragmatist, even when he was good. And yes, you've just made a deal with the old gods, but you're not stupid. You know what a deal with the old gods means.
You know it's a devil's bargain, yeah.
You know it better than anybody. So they're going to betray you, and you'd better be ready to betray them. You know what I mean? Like, betray them back. And I just keep thinking about this.
It's Desdemona and Xanathos all over again.
Yeah. Like, oh, sure, yeah, you betrayed me, and I have also betrayed you. And, you know, you wouldn't respect me if I didn't. It's kind of like Ashara and N'Zoth, really. And I think it would only work on N'Zoth, because N'Zoth kind of respects guile in a way that the other old gods wouldn't. And because he had to use it to fight them in the first place, because he was the weakest of the old gods.
And we have an inkling that N'Zoth was the one that really sort of like tickled the brain meats of Deathwing to sort of push that over the edge, right?
Yeah, from the beginning, we've always known that it was probably N'Zoth.
Because he always works through subtlety, yeah.
Yeah, the first time we even hear about N'Zoth is through that whole section.
Yeah.
But it's like one of the things that keeps coming back to me about that object, that gauntlet, whatever it was, and its connection to quote-unquote order magic, and that this order magic, I don't think that the Drakthir were controlled.
No, I think their natural tendency was amplified.
I don't even think it was that, although that's not a bad way to put it, but I think the way that this device worked was it created consensus. How do you create consensus?
So this,
you get everybody together discussing things, right? That's how we do it. But this artifact allowed him to do it instantly.
I have a different take on this, I think, and I want to present this.
And we'll find out what it's. Go ahead. I'll come back to mine when you're done.
No, go finish.
Just I'm looking at the scenes where she says suddenly everything became confusion, and I think what happened was when he was using the artifact, he wasn't imposing his will on them, because then they'd just be drones, and he doesn't want drones. What he was doing was linking them so that when he had an order for them, they could immediately take it, digest it, and come up with ways to execute it. That's the difference between a drone and a soldier. A drone just does what you tell it. A soldier looks at what you want and gives you that.
So
they don't, and I think that that's kind of like what the device was. That's why he calls it order magic,
yeah,
and not domination magic.
Yeah,
I think it was creating an order for them. And when it got broken, it couldn't do that anymore. And a reason I think it's that, the reason I think it was the thing Razgoth was there to attack in the first place was because think about what happens to the elementals when they all have access to enough spirit, which is what we call, you know, we think is anima. When they have enough of it, they're not aggressive towards each other. They can work out their differences. They can reach consensus.
Maybe. I think there might be.
I know there might be more, and I totally don't want you to abandon what you're thinking, which is why I now want you to go with it so I can then react to it.
So here's the thing, and this is a discussion that since this short came out that a lot of the lore community has been discussing. Talison and Evital have talked about it. I believe Jesse and the Lost Codex has talked about it. And the community at large has been posting about it, and there's been debates back and forth of where this device actually came from. And some people are saying that this might be too on the nose, but I think there's a lot here that sort of lends to the idea that there might be a couple things that maybe give us an indication of where this thing was has its point of origin. Matt probably already knows what I'm going to say, and you probably all do as well. There's an element, I think, of Tyr here, right? Tyr was a Titan Forge keeper, the mightiest of the Watchers, who was a wonderful warrior and a leader, a general supreme that resided in the Temple of Order in Alduar. He lost one of his hands fighting against one of the greatest corrupted creatures that we have ever been told that has existed. We don't know what happened after that. We don't know if that particular part of him was dissolved inside of Galakrond. We honestly don't even know where his body is because it certainly isn't underground. And some of the arguments have made is, well, Tyr is absolutely gigantic. It can't possibly be his. But what if it's based off of what was left of Tyr's body? Or at least in that particular case, his hand. What if that is exactly what Naltharion went and did? Went to the place where Galakrond's body fell. He can do it. None of the protectors of the Dragonflight that are stationed around there are going to tell him no. Not at this point. He's a well-respected dragon aspect, a warder of the deep places. They know that this is his domain. They're going to let him do what he wants to do. Maybe he goes and retrieves this artifact thinking he needs something like this. He needs a little more order magic, a little more power to make everything sort of work together. And two things happen. One, he finds what he's looking for and refashions it, which we know makes things stronger or more pronounced. We've literally been told this for 3 expansions now. Whether it's Rune Blades, whether it's Mourn Blades, whether it's the crown, the Helm of Domination or the Crown of Wills, whether it's Rune Magic in general, everything that gets broken and reformed tends to be stronger or more amplified in a purpose. But Galakrond was corrupted. What corrupted him? We have said that it's Old God or necromantic influences. If it was Old God influences, that's a really good way of introducing that little tiny voice. If it's been sitting in a festering corpse that the old gods have been sort of like into for a while now, and he repurposes it, that little tiny voice at the back of his head as he's wielding it that says, yeah, you can go ahead and do this. This is consensus, maybe. Or this is you making your will known. Because it always struck me, maybe not necessarily as will jacking to what you're saying, but as further order of a general being able to give direction to every soldier at the same time, right? There's that line that Emberthal says, it was as if our wills were one. Well, this is something that we do in real life with telecommunication. We have communications officers inside of military groups that sort of act as the center points that allow information to flow back and forth. And that's what allows armies to move in unison and work together in concert. Well, this is sort of the Azeroth version of it, right? And having something that's based off of maybe a Titan Watcher that was known to be a great warrior, that was known to be associated specifically with an aspect of order, would not be out of the question. And I think there might be something there with it, where maybe that's where the root of this is. And I'm not saying that's the complete story with it, but I think it solves two problems of where did this magic come from and how did the old gods get out their hands inside of Deathwing to begin with? Because it's a subtle thing, right? It's not an overt thing. And maybe he knew they existed because they were imprisoned. Maybe that information was entrusted to them. I don't know if we ever actually had confirmation that the aspects knew that there were old gods chained inside of Titan facilities or not. I don't think we have confirmation of that. I think we've made a lot of assumptions about that. But yeah, I can't help think that this is something that once belonged to Tyr or was a part of Tyr. And I can't shake that feeling.
Yeah, I don't think those two things are necessarily contradictory, because you know what this reminds me of the most of anything? Battle meditation.
Yeah.
If you guys don't know what battle meditation is, it's from Star Wars. It's a Jedi, I don't want to call it art, but I don't know what else to call it, a Jedi ability with the Force that's considered one of the most dangerous, but it's a light side ability. It's not a dark side. There's never been a dark side user who had battle meditation. It wasn't taught to them, and they couldn't, if they didn't already know it, they couldn't learn it. And very few people could learn it, in fact. It was so rare that when somebody was found to have capacity with it, oftentimes there wasn't anybody to teach them. They had to just figure out how this worked by themselves. If you've played Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, you saw battle meditation in action. And you saw that whilst it was not an ability that the dark side knew how to teach, it was one they could use if they fell to the dark side after having already learned it.
Mm-hmm.
We see Bostily using it. I think what we see of Deathwing using that device, I keep calling him Deathwing, but he was Neltharion at the time. I don't think he was controlling them. I think he was imposing an order.
Yeah,
like a consensus.
But that's why I said, like, I think it's delivering that like order, like giving that order more efficiently, right?
It's like I said, I think it's like battle meditation where he reaches out and touches everybody's minds and basically shares with them,
here's the plan,
what I think we should do, and gets all their feedback instantly. She specifically says it's like our will was one.
Mm-hmm.
And what that says to me is that she even says that we trusted him. We would have done anything he asked. They would have done anything he asked, whether or not he had the artifact.
Oh yeah. No, they were 100% devoted. He was their general.
And as a result of that, that's why I think, first off, it's why I think I don't dislike your idea that it might have been related to Tyr, because I keep thinking about when Caligos found the spark of Tyr and saw, the sparks of Tyr are devices that were basically recorders. And what they did was very much what Nozdormu was trying to do here. They record memories of an event and then play them back. He's trying to use his abilities and this Drakthyr to do the same thing. And it's quite possible that that's because the order device that Neltharion was using is similar in some way to the Sparks of Tyr. But what's really interesting about all of this to me is this idea, not just that there's betrayal involved, but that Neltharion locked them away. Like it's implied that he was afraid of them, but it's also implied that he wanted them to be able to develop.
Right. Because don't forget that they weren't like locked away in such a way that they would like decay, or that wasn't like a prison. They were locked away in like an arcane lock where they were preserved.
Yeah. And he wanted them preserved.
Mm-hmm.
And that's interesting, because even if we assume that he's, we know that the Silver Hand was forged for Tyr when his hand was destroyed. We don't know if the Silver Hand, what it was made of.
Yep.
We don't know if it was made out of his hand. That would be kind of weird. But we do know that it was made after he lost his hand.
Yeah. By Jotun, right?
Yep. And Tyr, we saw Galakrond bite his hand off and swallow it. And when he was fighting Galakrond was mutating the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Like every time Tyr hit him, he was turning into a dragon, like an actual dragon, which the proto-drakes that were fighting him, the aspects before they were aspects, wouldn't have recognized. But it was clear whatever was going on with Galakrond was partially Tyr's fault. Tyr says as much.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about that in the past. What does that mean? What was Galakrond's deal? But in this, what's really interesting is we don't know, you pointed out, we don't know what happened to Tyr's hand. But we know that the spark of Tyr, that Tyr was reaching out to grab when he got his hand bitten off by Galakrond, was later found by Caligos.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't get swallowed. Now, he was grabbing it when that happened. So it was in his hand. Did it just poop him out? Like, what's the deal here? Why was that thing still intact? Why was it there on the battlefield thousands of years later for Caligos to find it?
Was it purposely expunged by the old gods that had infested Galakrond's body? Was there a reason behind it?
Or what if the hand didn't go down the maw in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
He just bit it off. And that means the hand was left around. But if the hand was left around, why wasn't the hand there? But then think about this. Unrelated to that, Tyr knew his hand was left there. Tyr knew that because him, Tyr and Jotun made the silver hand that the replaced his former hand with. Why did Tyr, if Tyr's hand was left around, why didn't he go get it? Why did he leave the spark there? It's not like Tyr didn't know it was there. It's not like Jotun didn't know it was there. That's just really interesting to me.
Yeah, there's a lot here, and I want to make sure that, like, I don't want to have Tyr removed from the conversation when it comes to the hand moving forward. And for all of our listeners, keep it in mind.
We should point out that a lot of the stuff we're going to see in Dragonflight is based around the places like Tyrhold. Mm-hmm. Like, Tyr obviously had a presence on the Dragon Isles. Tyr himself, like, the Titan stuff we see there was related to Tyr. And that's worth thinking about. This, the whole Primalist Rebellion, we still don't really know much about it. We don't know, like, who was fighting in this. We know it was some proto-drakes, but why? What, like, how did it start? Because one of the things that's fascinating for me about all this is that some people have tried to accuse these Legacy shorts and Dragonflight in general of being retcons. And in the classical definition of the term retcon, they are. Because it's continuity that we didn't know up to now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not changing anything. Because previously, we have for WoW's history is, you know, before 10,000 years ago, various things happened at various times that we don't, you know, it's myth and legend stuff. There's never a date given, and nobody talks about how long between these events were. We don't know how long the aspects were aspects before the Sundering, which took place 10,000 years ago. We don't know how long there was between Galakrond and that happening. We have no idea how long the history of the dragons is.
Yeah, and I think that's another thing that is sort of important, and why I think the shorts involving Norsdalmu are important as well, right? Because time is the one thing that we don't generally have a scale that we can hold up and measure against. We know relative
before 10,000 years ago.
Not before 10,000 years ago. We can measure that, but so much happened before that. So much could have already been set in motion. There's so much that we don't know. And there are beings that would be able to tell us about that. And now we're starting to get a little bit about that. But we don't know how long, like in this particular case, we don't know how long the Dragon Isles existed, really. Yep.
Well, I mean, the Isles probably existed before the dragons even went there.
And it may have been a Titan facility before the dragons went there.
Mm-hmm. Might have been something Tyr gave them.
Exactly. Right? Like, you guys are going to need this now more than I do, because now you're in charge of defending the world. It's no longer my responsibility.
If Galakrond is Tyr's fault, the Dragon Isles might be where Galakrond was originally affected by whatever was affecting him.
And what would happen if Naltharion...
Dude, you're going to take the hat off because the thoughts are just beaming across, and I need to, like, be able to think my own thoughts.
Because we're on the same wavelength here, and I love it.
It does kind of seem like
but,
that.
But that's the thing I love about this, too, is, right, because when I said at the beginning of this that this starts to color everything that Deathwing started to do and everything that his children did for years to come afterwards, this is where you start to really see it, because, again, it all boils back down to Tyr. If Tyr was the one that was experimenting with Galakrond and is the reason that it happened, and if that happens to be on the Dragon Isles, which I really do suspect it was, that means he's got a laboratory or a system or something there very similar to what we saw in Uldir, right? In Uldir with Mother, when all that stuff was going on, it was a test facility. It had rooms and containment set up to mess with arcane and biological substances and mashing them together. They accidentally created an old god. It cannot be the first time that they've messed up like that. And Galakrond is proof that it's very likely, you know, that is the first mess up, or at least the most public of them. But if it happened on the Dragon Isles and all of a sudden Tyr is gone and all of the dragon flights are left to inherit all of these facilities, Naltharion is a keeper of the deep places. He's going to go places that the other ones wouldn't even consider going. Norsdamu is going to be dealing with time. He's going to be dealing with the chamber that we are shown on the Dragon Isles in the shorts, where it looks very similar to the Mogu creation engine, by the way, where it seems like that is a convergence point for the pathways, potentially. At least that's my assumption. That's my tinfoil hat guess of what that is. You have Alexstrasza, who's concerned with life and is going to be more focusing on what's on the surface. You have, why can't I think of his name now? Not Caligos.
Malagos?
Malagos, who is concerned with the keeping and tidying of magic and is worrying about the ley lines and how magic is developing across the world isn't looking inward necessarily. And Ysera is concerned with also not just protecting the nature, but making sure that the Emerald Dream is curated and tended to, or at least guarded in whatever capacity that they were charged with by Freya. So why, or I wouldn't say why, so Neltharion traveling into the earth and wandering around this place and learning as much as he can about what Tyr did makes sense. And now look at his further experimentations.
Look, and also think about this while we're talking about this. Yeah, maybe there was some corruption from whatever. If Tyr went and got a piece from, you know, the whole hand of Tyr getting bitten off by Galagrond thing, if that's where that artifact came from, then yeah, there might be some Ulgoth corruption from that. But let's assume for a moment he didn't. That it came from somewhere else.
Maybe he just took a piece of Galakrond when he went and got his hand back and brought it back to the lab.
Or maybe he didn't never went to Galakrond. Maybe he didn't do any of that. Maybe that's just, because that's just speculation. We don't know.
Sure.
But we do know this. If the place where Tyr changed Galakrond was on the Dragon Isles, and if, as seems likely, Neltharion went down in there, because we know Neltharion has a lab on the Dragon Isles, because we're going to go to it. It's a dungeon.
Yep.
So think about this for a second. Was that Tyr's lab first? And did he basically go in there and find, and the first time he contacted the idea of the old gods was when he went into that lab and saw Tyr and Mother and others were working on some kind of containment for these necrophotic parasitic entities. And yeah. He's like, what are these things? Like, why are they in the earth? That's my domain. Like, did he already know they were there? If he already knew they were there, then you bet your money he was going into that lab looking for something about them.
Mm-hmm.
Because you'd want, if you're in charge of the earth, you'd want to know what everything you could about these things. And if he didn't know about them, that's the first crack right there. That's the first, you know, you start wondering, maybe the Titans don't have my best interest at heart when you find out that they locked horrible monstrosities in the place they have you guarding and didn't mention it.
Yeah, because like, that's the other thing. Like, we don't, the dragons never really talk about the old gods, right?
I mean, they talk about them in terms of the old gods are attacking, we must stop them. But there's not a lot of, oh yeah, the old gods, here's everything we know about them.
Mm-hmm.
We've never heard, like, anybody say, well, we first found out about the old gods at what point? Like, you know, that has never come up.
And it seems now,
granted,
like,
go ahead.
I was going to say, because, like, in the interactions, it seemed like they knew about it because of what happened with Deathwing. And it feels like they knew about it after the fact. Like, I'm picking up what you're saying. It seems like something that they maybe should have been told, but it feels like they weren't told. That they weren't told that these are horrors that exist that might come back to haunt you.
And possibly they weren't told about them just because the Titan Forge thought that's our deal to deal with. Mm-hmm. Your deal is stuff that comes from Azeroth. You know, you handle this, we'll handle that. But maybe it was simply an oversight. Or maybe they did get told about it. We just don't know yet. But regardless, however it worked out, there's so many different ways that the contact could have happened here at this place in this lab, or do you know what I'm saying? Like it feels an awful lot like this is also involved in where of this Primalist Rebellion comes from.
Yep.
Like if Tyr was experimenting on drakes, he might have done some stuff to some drakes,
yeah.
Or the experiments themselves might have caused something, or even if just the drakes themselves were like, this dude's sketchy. We don't want anything to do with these people.
Well, think about it.
It's clear. One of the Primalists even says that they're going to cleanse Azeroth of the Titans' interference.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's interesting because when you take that thought and you start looking at the other things that Deathwing did, look at his other labs, look at his other experimentations. The first real look that we got into it was not necessarily the Black Rock Spires, but it was Blackwing Lair. And in Blackwing Lair, there's all manner of laboratories. There's an entire section that is literally beacons and burners and everything else. And there are.
Okay, I gotta kind of disagree with you. I think it is Black Rock Spire because of the Gith encounter.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I mean, granted, Gith is like outside the door to Blackwing Lair. But nevertheless, the first time you go in, we see. Not only is Nefarian, you know, there is Lord Victor Nefarious egging on Rend, but he gives him a freaking chromatic drake to ride around on.
Yeah,
chromatic drake eggs.
Yeah, I totally forgot about the chromatic drake eggs. But like That's
but
what
it
I
just
was trying
confirms
to
your it. Theory. It absolutely confirms your theory. The centrifuges with all the dragon blood in them, the dragon corpses hanging from chains.
Cro-Magnus.
All of that. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Gith himself. Gith all is a the, fully functional chromatic drake.
Yeah. All of the draconoids that we encounter. Like everything about this place is just further. It's showing sort of, I don't want to say an evolution of what he did with the Drakthyr, but it very well may be. Where did he even get the idea for the Drakthyr? And going back to your thought, if he did find Tyr's lab, that would make perfect sense. If he's looking at this experimentation and seeing how Tyr is applying, let's say, elemental forces to nature, natural occurring creatures on Azeroth's surface, and oops, accidentally Galakrond, or accidentally ticks off every of the elemental drakes because maybe he was capturing elemental proto drakes or elemental drakes and experimenting on them with the curse of flesh, trying to turn them into something else. Because again, we don't know where Galakrond came from, but we.
And we don't even know that Tyr did.
We
that
don't know.
Galakrond against his will. It's quite possible he just showed up, rocked up to Galakrond, and said, look, you're apparently the most well regarded of your kind. How would you like to help shepherd them into a new future that would have taken you, you know, eons to get to without me?
Yeah.
And Galakrond's like, yeah, I like helping my people. I like to organize hunts and give my people food and be an inspiration to them. Sure. Yeah. What do I have to do? And then next thing you know, that didn't work.
Right. Because you know? We're told that the five proto drakes that become the Aspects are the most intelligent. That doesn't mean they're the only intelligence. Right. Yeah.
And for that matter, I mean, again, it's said multiple times that Galakrond is well respected among his kind.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that he helped them. He was considered, up until he suddenly came back and was a monster, they liked him as much as you like anybody who's a big dragon thing. I mean, they weren't like exactly having parties, but, you know, he organized hunts. That sounds, you know, and there's a debate that when the proto-drakes know Galakrond's doing stuff, they have a debate. They discuss it. It's a lot. It makes orc moots seem like, you know, centerpieces of erudition because they're not exactly like sitting around and having well-reasoned arguments. They're basically just yelling at each other, but it's still something. They were obviously already there. I can see why he picked them, you know? Why would he pick dragons and not any other group? Well, he didn't pick humans or dwarves or anything because they didn't exist yet, and they're just Titanforged anyway. Why would he pick his own kind? He's looking for something that seems native to Azeroth. And Protodrakes may not be native to Azeroth, but they're certainly part of it. And they're organizing themselves. And this is in the past, way before anybody else did. There's no troll empires yet.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody. Of course he's going to pick these guys. And so there's so many different ways this could have come about. It's really fascinating because this is so much we don't know, but it's tantalizing how it falls together. Like your point about the hand of Tyr, I'd never considered it. What if it literally was, we've got the fist of Ra'den.
Yep.
Maybe it is the hand of Tyr.
Well, and that's what I mean. Like we've seen Titan for or Titan Watcher relics and Titan forged items be able to be reconstituted, be able to be shifted, be able to be reforged or repurposed.
Oh, wow. Dude, you just made me think of this.
Go for it.
Of the three big ones, the three most influential and powerful of the Titanforged that came to Azeroth.
Odin, Tyr,
Ra. Odin, Tyr, and Ra.
Yep.
Odin gets his face mutilated and loses an eye.
Yep.
Ra'den gets his heart pulled out and is mutilated.
Uh-huh.
Tyr has his hand cut off and is mutilated.
Uh-huh.
And there's artifacts from at least two of them. The Eye of Odin is, we fight it at one point.
Yep.
It's wandering around the Shadowlands. The hand of the fist of Ra'den is used to help create the elemental planes that they imprison the elementals in, and later on a shaman uses it.
Yep.
But we've not seen Tyr's hand. We've seen the mace, Tyr's hand, but that mace was the mace he had before he lost his hand.
Now, interestingly enough, and I want to throw this out there because this is a bit of speculation based off of some things that were revealed in game. This is mild spoilers. There are in-game models for this particular item. For the hand, for this relic item that Naltharion is wearing, both shattered and whole. What that means, it could be something that they're just using for cinematics, or maybe we might be getting our hands on the third of the Titan Watcher relics, the one that we don't know what happened to, which I think would be absolutely fascinating and absolutely interesting, especially if we're the ones putting it back together. And it would fit, going back to what you were talking about at the beginning, if we're fighting the Primalists, and the Primalists don't care for Tyr, they don't care for the Titans and the Titan Watchers and the Titan facilities, because they know what's going on, or at least they have an inkling of what's going on. Maybe they saw what happened to Galakrond, or maybe they saw what happened to others of their brood. Maybe they can sense that magic. Maybe that's part of what we're doing, is putting that together, putting that back together, you know, like we've done with some other relics in the past, Helm of Domination, in order to take the fight to them in a very specific way. It would not.
Yeah, that's at least one possibility. Yeah.
I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. Yeah.
What if that thing was used on them before?
Mm-hmm. To keep them at bay.
Yeah. Or, you know, what if he used it on Galakrond to convince him it was a good idea to let him do whatever he did to Galakrond?
Well,
and that's the other thing, is we don't know what Tyr did.
We don't know what Tyr was capable of. Because, I mean, that's the other thing too, right? Like, if it was part of him, if it was his actual factual hand, and it was a piece of him, we don't know the extent of his power at the height of his power. We know that Odin was absolutely mighty, right? We know that Odin had a ton of capability to do all manner of things.
We've seen that Odin learned how to basically create and reanimate bodies.
Yeah.
And we've seen that Ra'den was strong enough to create an elemental plane.
Yep.
I mean, Helya helped him design it, but he executed it.
Yeah.
He's the one that made it. Now, think about the fact that of the three, Tyr was the physically most powerful of them. And they were all strong. I mean, you know, Odin and Tyr went in together and smacked around.
Odin and Ra went after Ragnaros.
Okay, yeah. So Odin and Ra went in after Ragnaros. But think about, Tyr is supposedly better at that than they were. He was the best of them. Only Thorim rivaled him in might, and Tyr was the better soldier. Tyr was the better battlefield commander.
Oh, no, I apologize. It was Tyr and Odin. It was Tyr and Odin that fought Ragnaros. I apologize.
That makes sense. But think about it. How did Tyr get to be that good? And why did that leadership not translate to being the prime designate? If Tyr was the physically strongest and best general, was it because he did this to the Titans, the Titan Forged? Is this the way the Titan Forged fought? They linked up through Tyr?
Which would explain why Tyr
is in the Temple of Order, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Like, when not at war, you don't need someone to lead like this. I mean, heck, look at Roman history. The whole concept of a dictator, before it turned into what it is today and we all hate it, the original Roman concept of a dictator was, okay, we're at war, that guy's at charge now. The second we're not at war anymore, we don't have to listen to that guy anymore.
Yeah, it's literally the person that is reciting, like, you know, giving
he's
orders,
dictating
right? He's
to
dictating
you.
What's
he's,
going to happen, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what we're looking
well,
at,
and,
it feels
and,
like.
And I can't stop thinking about that, too, because the Temple of Order is broken by the time we get there.
Oh, yeah, it's destroyed, and there's stuff coming up out of it.
And it's separated.
Empty, too.
What's that?
And it's empty. It's only one that doesn't have any sign of anybody having been there.
Yes, it's been cleared out. Why has it been cleared out? And it's separated from the rest of the Alduar facility. It's no longer linked with it as well. Like, there's a lot that isolates it from everything else, and it's overgrown and crumbling and broken. Yes, it's the lights are still on, but why specifically that one? Why was that torn apart? Right? Was that Loken? Was that Loken, you know, throwing a tantrum? Was that Odin throwing a tantrum? Was that aftermath of, you know, the separation of Odin's little section of the Halls of Valor being transported to its own location in prison?
And there's also a point that's made. I looked at a couple of different places that looked it up. One of the points that's made is that there's no specific sign of a struggle.
Yes.
Unlike at other places, when Tyr lit out, and we know where Tyr went, but when he lit out, he left the place just there. He didn't do anything to defend it.
Mm-hmm.
He abandoned it, and there's nothing there now.
But I like I like your idea, though, and this is kind of where, like, one of the core things that I think about too with this is the idea of sort of the Titan Forge being able to sort of link together with the sort of Watchers and the generals of it, because we know that they waged war against the Black Empire. We know
as an opening act, they subdued all the elementals and the elemental lords, who are power itself. The elemental lords are raw elemental power, and they fought those guys. at their full, not it like some avatar, not some form that had been beaten on the material plane and then was trying to regenerate itself when we showed up. They fought them at their prime, and even the old gods couldn't beat them physically. The old gods used magic to constrain them. And that's something to keep in mind, because what did they use? The Cipher of Damnation, which sounds an awful lot like domination magic to me, but I'm just, I'm just a simple caveman, lore fiend. But like, think about this. They use something that dominated the elementals and controlled them. The Titans show up, say, "Oh, we can't just go down there. We'll ruin the place." And so they send down the Titan Forged in all their different, with the Titanic Watchers and the top as the commanders, but they're orderly beings. Wouldn't they want to make an army that was similarly orderly?
Yeah, but and I mean,
how
it's
do you
efficient,
ensure it?
Right?
How do you ensure it? Yeah, how do you ensure it though? Because you can't get down in there. It's like when we build nanotech, which we have done. It's nothing like in the science fiction yet, but we've built microscopic robots and we've used them to do things. So we program them and then slave them to a master unit. And it's. I think this is where what we're looking at.
Yeah.
The ability to say, okay, we're at war now. I'm the master unit. You got to do what I say.
You plug in. But also you plug in as sort of like that central check-in point, right?
Exactly. Do you remember when Diablo 2 Resurrected couldn't get through the login process because it was using the original code?
Yep.
For before Battle.net existed? What if that's what Tyr is doing, or what this device does? It goes back to, like, forget all this newfangled stuff you've evolved. I'm going to push this thing here that is primal to you, that is central to thinking.
Now, the interesting thing is going to be whether or not we find a place on the Dragon Isles, in Tyr's Hold, in everything that we find here, that is a replacement for the Temple of Order.
Or, ooh.
Mm-hmm.
You remember how you were talking before, a couple of shows ago now, about how Ulduar didn't join in?
Yep.
Because think about what Tyr would have said about that. Had Tyr been around to do anything about it. And think about what the Temple of Order could have been used to do. Like you've pointed out before that it's just sitting there.
What
if the Temple of Order still exists, then all the other temples might route to it. And that now you've got direct, unambiguous access to the engine of the makers.
Which is why at the end of Battle for Azeroth, while we're sitting there trying to route everything through the heart chamber, through a main control system, we're literally hacking the Gibson to make it work.
Yeah, because it doesn't have the original control center is not in use.
And that's why Ulduar can be cut off, because again, the Temple of Order is no longer connected to everything. It's not being routed through that central location anymore. Talk about it being empty and broken and having it being separated from the rest of Ulduar. But it's because of that Memar can go, nope, hanging up now, and then just cut off that facility.
And you're talking about if there's a structure like it on the Dragon Isles, but I think about it this way. Don't think about, is there a structure like it on the Dragon Isles? Think about, is it the Dragon Isles?
Yes.
What if the Dragon Isles entire was that structure? It was the place where he went, that the Temple of Order would have just been, like, for lack of a better word, I'm trying to think of the right way to put this. The Temple of Order would have just been the first connection node between that facility and Ulduar. It would have been his version of, I'm taking my ball and getting out of here, but not to run away, but to
have a secure work location.
On the problem.
Yeah.
It's working on the problem. But the problem of ordering Azeroth is, how do we order it with these chaos things inside?
And not only that, but think about it this way too. We know that the Dragon Isles were only being reawoken as the ley lines were healing. There's a specific reason it was placed there, mm-hmm. right? And until the ley lines were moved back into place, the dragons couldn't find it. They couldn't go back home. Why couldn't they find it? Why couldn't they go back home? You know, what was the mechanism that was keeping it secure from even them? And was that the natural order of it? Was it Tyr's hidden oasis that still tapped into the nexus of ley lines that connected literally every Titan facility? Because pretty much every Titan facility. If we were ever to get a map of the ley lines of Azeroth, I'm almost willing to bet every single Titan facility was placed at either a nexus or a junction point of all of the ley lines before Azeroth exploded.
Yeah, but dude, what if we have it backwards?
Oh,
what if, I'm sorry, I wasn't pushing the button. I was so excited. what if the reason that we could only find it now wasn't because the ley lines weren't connected to it and therefore couldn't be sensed or whatever, but what if it's like an artificial concentration of ley lines?
Mm.
What if Tyr worked around the, because when they were, they're ordering Azeroth. Mm-hmm. That's the whole thing they're doing, is ordering Azeroth after the Black Empire falls, right? So one of the processes of ordering it is to channel back all as much energy as you can to the big wound that was created when they ripped Yashraj out, right? When Amonthul reached down and goes, pluck, he accidentally thought, you know, I'm just going to get that pimple, and boom, the thing exploded, and there's gunk everywhere, and there's a big hole, and he's like, oh, man, that's not what I wanted. So they're trying to organize everything, order it, and get all the as much power as they can back into Azeroth, much like when the Azerite's coming up out of everywhere, we're trying to get it back into Azeroth. We're trying to feed it back in, right? What if the Dragon Isles are this natural wellspring of that power that got pulled away when the Sundering happened? They got cut off, and the power there was being used to create all the stuff that Tyr was doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when the dragon, you know, the dragons are like, something bad's happened, we have to go try and save the world, and left and put the Titan Watchers on in charge, we see them do something. They seal the place off, right? That's the original cinematic. We see them do something. That's them cutting off the Dragon Isles from the ley line network and channeling all of its natural ley line nexus power
back into it,
into itself, to basically hold it in abeyance, to pull it away. And so it's isolated. When the Sundering happens, it's not part of the ley line network. But when Azeroth is healing from the offense of Legion, when it's healing from the sword wound, when it's healing from all that Azerite stuff, Azeroth reconnects the ley line.
And think about it this way too, like going on that same front, like people have been saying, like, we sacrificed our artifacts and did all this thing with the giant sword in Azeroth and nothing's happened from it. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and posit that something has happened from it. And going with what Matt's saying here, this is something I've been thinking about too. It's been healing. And what happens when you heal one thing? Your body tries to heal everything.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things about healing that's so fascinating is that healing isn't you just grow back new. Healing is you grow new tissue. You can actually, the reason scurvy exists is because the collagen in your healed wounds can fall apart if you don't get enough vitamin C. So if Azeroth is attempting to repair itself, it's building new stuff to do it. It isn't just, you know, here's my old stuff back again. Of course not. The old stuff's gone. It has to make new stuff. And the new connections, as it reaches out and finds its ley lines, it's like, what's this thing over here? There's a lot of ley line juice over there. Boop. Now that power is going into Azeroth again, and Azeroth is going into it again, which fulfills the condition and releases the lock. And so they start waking up. What if it's, in fact, the power's been there this whole time? And my, yes, Siri, I get it.
But yeah, I think that's interesting, right? Because like you said, in the cinematic, when we see, and I will forever call him Stony Danza, this is a hill I will die on.
Hold us closer, Stony.
But when we see him make his way to the top and light the beacon, maybe it's not a beacon he's lighting. He's turning off the lock, right? He's reactivating whatever the initial purpose was and taking it out of mothballs and letting it do what it needs to do. And that's why the dragons can find it again. And
yeah, we see him, literally, we see him lock the door behind them.
Yep.
That's the opening. When they're leaving, we get Alex Straza's really cool voiceover. The lights, he turns the lights off and shuts the door. And then when he wakes up, it's like, what's going on? And he's like, oh, everybody's messed up and there's lava everywhere. This is not supposed to still be going if I'm awaking. I got to get up there and turn it off. And that's the whole video, man, is him getting up there to turn it off while Elton John serenades him.
I have that video, by the way, thanks to our listeners. But I mean, it's fascinating. Like this particular short, and some people are giving these a lot of gruff. They're laying it on the sand. They're not full cinematics. They're not as good as the other ones. I think you're wrong, the people that are saying this. I think that these are very, very good. It is a different art style than we're used to seeing, but the content is still there that starts to lay out what's to come or what's been happening. And in particular, while one and two sort of laid the groundwork for what the direct theory were and sort of gave you a sort of an introduction to the dragonflights, if you weren't unfamiliar with them, which again, I argued is something that needs to be done for people that maybe didn't read those books and maybe are just coming to the game now. Cause there are a ton of people that started playing recently.
The last time we had a major dragonflight involved expansion was 11 years ago.
Yeah. It's been 11 years.
Yeah. So, you know, I wasn't even 40 yet. Yeah. I'm now 50, guys.
But I mean, think about that. That's 11 years of players coming to the game that, you know, may have missed that or weren't in the middle of that, or maybe didn't want to read the book. So you have to have a couple things that sort of set up what the dragonflights are and why they're important. But now you start getting into the more, I'd say our wheelhouse. It's the more esoteric, the more things that start leading you on and start giving you like the little breadcrumbs of where the story could go and give you deepening of the understanding of characters and things that happened in the past. And I don't use retcon as a negative thing. I'm with Matt on this one. A retcon is literally what goes back and fills in the gaps. And that's what they're doing here. They're filling in gaps and it's making for some potentially very important, very impressive dragon storytelling of what's already happened. Not necessarily just what's going to happen, but what's happened before. Cause now I can guarantee, go ahead.
I'm just gonna say there's a big difference between filling in the gaps that were left purposely vague or like a paragraph several thousand years past. I mean, a lot of stuff can happen in several thousand years, but they were trying to get to the next big thing that they did know about. This isn't a case of them changing anything. This isn't, the Eredar. Oh yeah. Oops. But yeah. The Draenei were Eredar. Sorry, but that's where we're going with now. This is very much, we had nothing here. There was a placard saying history to be determined later. And that's what we're getting is a look at what was going on in the distant, distant past. This is, and keep in mind, we have no idea when this was. This is untold thousands. Ashara wasn't even like an idea in someone's head. Two night elves probably didn't even exist yet. But if there were night elves at this point, they hadn't even thought about having a kid yet.
Mm-hmm.
This is way back. And I think that Joe's right in that a lot of this stuff is coming up. It's not just getting to see the past. It's not just getting to see the future. It's getting to finally see the past. So yeah, I'm really excited for it.
And that's one of the things that I think is going to be most impressive about the Dragonflight expansion as we move forward is not necessarily just exactly what's going on now, but it's to me, it's an archaeological expansion. We are unlocking and spending time unlocking bits and pieces of Azeroth's history that one was never a volunteer to us and is going to forever alter the relationship we have with the Dragonflights, because that's a complicated thing to begin with. And anything that's here that they knew about that they didn't tell us about that could be a potential danger is going to shift how we deal with them and interact with them already. Beyond just,
I can't see it, but I'm nodding when he's talking.
beyond just the like, you know, Alex Straza being mad at us because the Death Knights went and took one of her kids. But it's just going to be such a potentially ground shaking expansion for interpersonal relation on Azeroth. So much is going to be unveiled here. So much about potentially the Titans and what their original goals were. And it could not be what we know. We've been told things, and I say this all the time, and I'm probably going to say this a million times more. Everything is a matter of perspective. It's a matter of who tells you the story. But here's the thing. When you go and investigate for yourself, you have nobody telling you the story. You're putting it together yourself. And as you're making your way through those the dungeons where you are in the laboratory of Deathwing and looking at his papers and his writings and his etchings and what he uncovered, the artifacts that he had, you're going to have a different understanding and you're going to be able to come to your own conclusion. Same thing with what's happening with the Bronze Dragonflight and what's happening with the Blue Dragonflight, because they're arcane libraries and they are arcane libraries. They are definitely book nerds. Shout out to the Blue Dragonflight, but you're going to learn more about them and about what they were. Cause don't forget, by the time we started encountering them, Malagos was already nuts. He was already like going off the deep end. We did not take long to get to him and have to take him out. The blue dragonflight's been in disarray for a long time. You know, the bronze dragonflight's been basically involved in essentially what amounts to a civil war with itself. Because the infinite dragonflight is essentially like, it's not brother versus brother. It's, you know, Ted versus Ted. It's hi, I'm Ted. Hi, I'm negative Ted. We're going to fight now.
You fool, you can't oppose me. I remember when I was you, naive and foolish. Wait, what happened to marry me into a dick?
The bronze dragonflight's been busy with that. The green dragonflight's been busy trying to fight void corruption and the nightmare for so long now that they've been sort of removed from it. Alexstrasza and the red dragonflight have had their own just absolute cavalcade of tragedies. So we've only dealt with them at these weird moments. And the last time we had it, like Matt pointed out, 11 years ago, you know, when we decided to go through and band together against Deathwing one last time, that was really the last major story beat we got from the dragons. And it was, even then, they just stepped back and said, it's time for mortals. We're done now. But we never were told what that meant. We really don't know what most of them were doing in between until we got to Legion and Ysera dies and, you know, now her daughter is supposed to be taking over. You have Malagos who's struggling to keep the blue dragon flight together because that's been a thing he's been Calagos has been struggling since the day he took over. It's fascinating and our relationships are all going to change. So I'm going to stop talking now and let Matt, if he has any final thoughts, throw them in here.
And I think we're pretty good.
All right.
I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing stuff like Malagos before the War of the Ancients. Keep in mind, Malagos wasn't just crazy, you know, for a little bit.
It was a long time.
Malagos spent 10,000 years basically trying to keep his flight going with like only a few dozen members and would probably have failed due to his complete total grief collapse if not for Alexstrasza preserving some of the Blue Dragonflight's eggs. And that's the thing. People don't know this. You know, the reason that there are currently black dragons and blue dragons at all is down to Alexstrasza.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's a lot going on here. There's a lot I want to see. I don't think this expansion can possibly hit all of my needs and wants, but I am looking forward to seeing which ones it tries to. And that's pretty much all I think I have to say this time.
Same. Like, I don't think we're going to get everything because there's too much here, but I think it's going to be a really great jumping off point. And it also makes me very interested to see what we're going to get from novelization at some point during this expansion, because at one point we used to get novels before an expansion would hit as setup. And this, certainly there was some expectation of that. I mean, even before the storm gave us some context, but with the most recent ones, they weren't pre-expansion. They were mid-expansion. They were furthering the story of the characters involved in there. And I am looking forward to see what they choose to show us in game and what gets plucked out and given an entire book worth of attention. I think that's going to be real exciting. But that's going to do it for us this week, folks. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch. Your continued support means this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads reset experience. Again, folks, if you have questions for the podcast, be sure to send them into podcast@BlizzardWatch.com. Specify the show that it's for. If you are a Patreon supporter, as a way of saying thank you, we offer up the Patreon queue and podcast questions channel on our Discord server. You can go ahead and throw questions in there, and we tend to look there first as a way of saying thank you for continued support, because it allows us to keep shows like this and the site at a large just operational in general. If you can't support us on Patreon, again, we understand. You can also use our Q and podcast questions channel, and if you want to support us without monetary involvement, spread the word, share our episodes and our articles with your friends, signal boost them on the social media of your choice. And if you are listening to us on a platform that allows you to leave reviews or ratings, please go ahead and do so. It sounds hokey, and I'm sure every content creator you have out there says it, but it does actually help. Giving things likes, giving them stars, giving them even a comment helps keep things relevant as we move forward and shows that, you know, you like our stuff and it helps. It really, really does. But with that, folks, we'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.